Now, it's not acting a lot like autumn at the moment, but some of the signs are there. Some of the trees are making their transitions from green to gold, and if you look a little higher up, you'll see birds beginning to make their way south for the winter migration. Humans, big surprise, can greatly affect that migration in a number of ways. We'll focus on the lights we keep on at night and how those affect the migrators. Mary Coolidge is with the Bird Alliance of Oregon, the Bird Safe and Lights Out campaign coordinator, and our guest on The Exchange. Mary, welcome.
Thanks, Jeffrey. Good to be here.
I want to talk about the bird safe part just a little bit first, because there's a shocking number at your website that nearly a billion birds die every year as a result of hitting windows. Why do we think that happens?
Yeah, that's right. We know that window collisions are among the top three conservation issues for wild birds after habitat loss and cats. And the issue is that birds just don't know how to interpret glass. This is true of humans, too, when we're young. But we learn to understand that glass is a solid object that we can't move through, whereas birds just don't pick up on architectural cues the way we can learn to. So they see a reflection of sky and trees and habitat in window glass, and they think it's a fly-through opportunity. And most collisions, you know, historically we thought that really it was high-rises that were the big culprits for window collision mortality. But what we've learned in more recent years is that just about half of all collisions are happening at our residential homes, and a little over half are happening at low-rise commercial buildings. So it's really closer to the ground that birds are hitting, and we need to just start marking our glass so that it's not creating such a deceptive hazard for birds.
More commercial buildings than residential?
Slightly more, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
It's a 56-44 split, I think, so just over half at low-rise commercial buildings.
Okay, and are there architectural or changes in glazing that we're exploring to try to help the birds out there?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. There are cities all across the country and around the world, in fact, that have developed requirements that exterior glazing have some kind of pattern on it or some other measure to try to reduce collision risk. And we've seen it even most recently, the development of a bird safe standard in New York City. All across the city, all development scales, all five boroughs, glazing up to 75 feet, I think, has to be bird safe. So we've definitely seen a huge spike in research and development. Most major window manufacturers at this point do offer a bird safe glazing option. Yeah, we have one in the city of Portland as well. No other cities, to my knowledge, in Oregon. There are a number of cities in the Bay Area that have developed bird safe requirements. So yes, there is definitely a lot of work being done to try to address this issue.
We're talking birds here on the Jefferson Exchange with Mary Coolidge, the Bird Safe and Lights Out campaign coordinator at Bird Alliance of Oregon, which you used to know as the Portland Audubon Society, now Bird Alliance of Oregon. If you have questions or comments to share about birds migrating and the light safe thing we're about to talk about, join us with your emails to jx@jeffnet.org. So what the migration of birds, what goes on at night? I mean, most of us are not paying a whole lot of attention, I guess, or able to, given that there's no light in the sky. What are birds doing in migration at nighttime this time of year?
Right. Yeah. So we are right now in the middle of peak fall migration. I think most people are aware that many birds migrate from their breeding grounds to their wintering grounds and back during spring and fall migration periods. And most of those birds, even if they're diurnal in general, active during the day, they migrate at night, about 80% of them. And they do this because the atmosphere is less turbulent at night. They can preserve their daytime hours for foraging and resting. They can avoid diurnal predators. And also, very importantly, because they use the stars to navigate. So birds will generally, this is a real generalization, but they'll generally take off about 30 to 45 minutes after sunset. And they'll fly all night long if conditions are good. This is a really incredible undertaking for tiny little birds, and it's very perilous to them because of hazardous weather, food shortages, all kinds of things. And increasingly, along their flyways, they're encountering light pollution at night. And so when that happens, it really drowns out the stars that they're using to navigate. and they will get drawn into areas with a lot of light pollution, come into urbanized areas, circle buildings maybe until they collapse. In some fairly rare instances, there are mass collision events like we saw at McCormick Place in Chicago just about this time last year, where 1,000 birds hit the convention center in one night. So things like that can happen. But more often, they just drop into these lit areas. And then the following morning, they wake up in a maze of buildings and glass and cats and cars and things like that that really make it hard for them to continue safely on their migration journeys.
Well, I had no idea they were so busy at night. That's a tough life for a bird, is to do all their traveling at night and then try to find places to roost and eat during the day.
Yeah. It's a pretty incredible undertaking that they do twice a year.
All right. So navigating by the stars, well, this is clearly what the problem is with the lights from humans. Is it, you know, you mentioned urban areas, urbanized areas, but is it limited just there though?
No, I mean, it can also be things like oil fields in places where there's a lot of oil development. It can be oil derricks out in open water. So any source of light pollution can really contribute to the problem. Oregon is certainly not the only place that has a lights out program. We see these across the country and, in fact, around the world where there are seasonal lights out programs asking folks during peak migration, whether you're a resident of the area or whether you're a building owner and manager or you're operating some other kind of facility that has a lot of lighting, to turn off any non-essential light at night, focused on the hours between 11 p.m. and dawn. And then if you're in a home or a building, closing your blinds and drapes, and then helping get the word out so that at the very least, at these very high risk times when we have a lot of birds moving on a particular night, we can help reduce light pollution and keep them moving on their journeys. But then, of course, beyond migration, there are impacts to nesting birds as well, impacts to fish, mammals, amphibians, insects. I think a lot of people know that we are having a lot of trouble with our insect populations worldwide. They're incredibly attracted to lights at night, and that's not good for their biology. Plants can even be affected, and then, of course, human health. So there are all kinds of impacts, and they really are year-round. The Lights Out campaign is really to address this one particular issue with birds on migration. And then the hope is that once people start thinking about how they can reduce their overnight lighting, particularly during peaks of migration, if they can replicate that throughout the year. So can you think about ways that you can be a little bit more thoughtful with your lighting year-round? I think very often people just don't know that light at night is actually acting as a pollutant. And so we haven't historically been really thoughtful and responsible in the way that we design it. And so just adopting some best practices, which have been developed to try to reduce the impacts of light pollution year-round.
Mary Coolidge is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, the Bird Safe and Lights Out campaign coordinator at Bird Alliance of Oregon. We're talking about lights out. We're in the lights out period to help birds migrate at night. If you have questions or comments for Mary, send them along by email to jx@jeffnet.org. I have to admit that the wincing a little bit this morning because I was up before dawn, which is a rare thing of late, and noticed that one of our motion detector lights is a bit hyperactive. That's the kind of thing you want people to see if they can snuff, huh?
Yeah, I mean, motion sensor lighting is actually great in the sense that if you're using it for safety, you're concerned about, you know, maybe prowlers or criminal activity around your property. If you have your lighting on a motion sensor, then you have the element of surprise for anybody who wanders onto your property. You also have a cue for you that there might be somebody or something on your property. So motion sensor lighting, in general, we do recommend over steady burning lighting. So does your porch light need to be on all night long, or could it be a motion sensor? And then if it comes on, you know that there's somebody or maybe even just a raccoon on your front porch and you're cued to go take a look. I have noticed lately that I'm seeing more and more very high intensity floodlights that people are putting on their homes and that we're seeing also in public and commercial areas. And so another thing that we can think about is exactly how much light intensity do you need? Can you reduce the amount of lighting? So there are best practices that have been developed by the Illuminating Engineering Society, who's really the foremost authority on lighting design, and Dark Sky International, that works to preserve dark skies. And there are some just some basic principles for responsible lighting, including making sure that it's aimed down, that it's fully shielded, essentially like having a lampshade on it, and that it's no brighter than necessary. Lastly, that it be warm color temperature. So with the conversion of a lot of our lighting to LEDs, we've seen a lot of really, really bright white lighting, generally referred to in the industry as blue-rich white light. This is the kind of light that is that most vertebrates are most sensitive to. So really making sure that rather than choosing that bright white lighting, that we're moving towards something that's yellower or what we consider warmer in color temperature.
Okay, so there are lots of different choices with lights. I'm a little surprised to hear that people are installing floodlights of such high intensity, given that the dark sky people have been on the job for decades now, trying to convince people to make it easier for us, in addition to the birds, to see the stars.
Yeah, I think we still have some work to do to raise awareness. And I mentioned Dark Sky International. They have a dark sky friendly lighting program where they actually certify lighting as dark sky friendly, meaning that it's well shielded, it's aimed down, it's generally not specified to be any brighter than what you really need for the particular condition. And, you know, you can even walk into a lot of big box stores and find lighting that is labeled as dark sky friendly. But I think there's still more work to do to make sure that people are more aware that this is an issue and how to select and where to find lighting that complies with that.
So, Mary, you declared Lights Out Portland from September 19th to October 19th. That puts us about halfway through. Any indication that there's been a fair amount of compliance?
Yeah, I mean, you know, we work very conscientiously with building owners and managers in the downtown Portland area. We also have a Take the Pledge to Go Lights Out program where we get residents to sign up to really take a hard look at their own home lighting. That's just in the Portland metropolitan region, but we do have partner organizations throughout the state of Oregon that also spread the word about the Lights Out issue, that help get the word out about Red Alert Nights. So we're really lucky to live in a time when there are researchers that are using radar technology to track bird movements. So they're using Doppler weather radar stations that are across the country. There are about 143 of them. And researchers at Cornell in the BirdCast lab and at Colorado State University in the Aero Eco Lab use that radar technology and also look at weather patterns, so precipitation, atmospheric pressure, wind, things like that, and they forecast bird movements. And then they get the word out to us, and we help broadcast that information around the state. There are folks that are doing it in, I think, many states across the U.S. And at this point, we've had about, I think we've had over 4 million birds on 9 nights in just in September. We have had almost 60 million birds that have crossed Oregon just in the first half of migration.
Wow.
So we get that word out on all our social media channels. We send it out to Audubon and Bird Alliance chapters around the state. Folks are doing that in other states, and really just hoping that we can have a cumulative impact of reducing overall light pollution while birds are moving at such high intensity.
Okay, a little bit from a lot of people can go a long way and help those birds migrate. So the Lights Out period is September 19th to October 19th. Mary Coolidge is the Lights Out campaign coordinator at the Bird Alliance of Oregon. Thanks so much for sharing this with us on the Jefferson Exchange.
Thanks for having me, Jeffrey. I really appreciate it.
You bet.